Mini episode 86 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow. Follow them on the web at the number one, stdownscouting.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, FDH Lounge mini episode number 86. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross coming at you here, part three of the nine-part Kyle Ross WrestleMania history anthology here.
Brings a little smirk. Kind of sick man would make me do this?
No, this is tremendous.
For the Brazier Burger, by the way.
Oh, no problem. No problem. We're rolling through there anyways. We're giving the people what they want here with these detailed histories.
You won't find it anywhere else.
No, you won't.
And God bless everyone else, by the way.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. You won't hear this sandwiched in between discussions of Star Wars toys. Oh, did I just say
yes,
that?
Yes. And some band who had a good debut album and then never did anything else after that. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know who we could be referring to.
I did always like the drills in the pound cake video. I'll say that.
that was tremendous. You know, my buddy and I used to goof on all the time. Because you remember when they were using...
By the way, this is funny. We're becoming guilty of what we just criticized.
I know, we are. Yeah. On the Van Halen that they sold the use for right now to Clear Pepsi.
I remember that,
okay.
Yes.
And then,
right now, this drink will be off shelves in 5 minutes.
My friend and I, we used to do it all the time. Like, right now, somebody is vomiting from the poor taste of Clear Pepsi. Yeah. Right now, somebody is making the most disgusted face they've ever drank and made after drinking something.
Yeah, that led itself to
all kinds of parody here.
Crystal Clear Pepsi.
Yes, yes. Awful, awful stuff. The clear craze of the early 90s. So we're looking at something just a few years before that here. The Trump years of WrestleMania, WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 5. We'll clearly take these more together and more as an overview than we did of our previous mini episodes here, because they are tied together by a couple of different commonalities here. Locale being one, as far as being held at Trump Plaza and everything. It's interesting because I go back and forth on this, on whether or not it's a clear sort of step down and an admission of sort of retrenching after WrestleMania 3. But by the same token, you got Trump offering you a big wad of cash if you're Vince McMahon, and maybe you're better off, if you take the long view of it, not trying to top the spectacle of WrestleMania 3 the next year. If you're confident and patient enough to look down the road, which, by the way, Vince McMahon generally is not. But maybe he was then, though.
He was a lot more paid. Now, I mean, now he would have switched venues 16 times between, you know, now and March. But
right.
You know who – have you ever watched the History of WrestleMania DVD, by the way?
I have, yes.
Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Okay, I did too. Yeah. And do you know what I got from it, though, talking about this location? Do you know who the one person who didn't hate the location for WrestleMania 4 and 5 was?
Who?
Vince McMahon. I didn't get the sense that he agreed. Like, that's a very, and it, you know, we are going to take a look at these much more, the WrestleMania 4 and 5, much more macro than micro, for a number of reasons that we're going to get into. But one of them,
a combined 30 matches between them is one reason.
Yeah. And none of them good.
Yeah.
But you're right. It gave it a distinct personality. Now, it was a very non-wrestling crowd. But the criticism of the venue, while valid, and I'll agree with it, the ECW Arena, Trump Plaza, is not, okay?
True.
Now, people need to remember Trump.
And it was just a short roadie from there.
Yeah. People need to remember, by the way, Trump Plaza was a real big deal during this time period. For them to be there, I mean, Tyson would fight in Trump Plaza. You know, Mike Tyson was the number one draw at pay-per-view.
Trump was a pretty hot celeb in the late 80s.
Yeah,
He got established in the mid-80s as a big celebrity.
But it's a very internet-based criticism, the venue. Like, internet types are the ones who kill these two WrestleManias.
Because the crowd, the work rate suck. Those are things that don't trouble Vince, though.
Exactly. And that's what another macro discussion I want to have about these two WrestleManias.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about this, your friend, well, I don't know about you. I can't speak for your friends, but my friends I know, if I were to, like, lay out all the WrestleManias and say, hey, you know, guys, you know, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, we're snowed in or something. I mean, it's not something to do, but pick a WrestleMania you want to watch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They would much rather, and granted, they don't watch, I mean, I'll, you know, a couple of people maybe come over for the maybe some of the bigger shows or something like that, but or go out or ask me or whatever, but what's going on. But they would much rather pick one of these two, I think,
right,
than, like, one of the more than, you know, say Batista's chase of Triple H at WrestleMania 21.
Sure.
You know, and I want to rectify it. It's very interesting to me, the critical scorn with the commercial success of these two shows, because these two shows were very successful. Five in particular did the bit, was a monster,
right,
on pay-per-view, did the best business they ever did. And I think the other commonality here, obviously, is the Hogan Savage, kind of the Mega Powers were not born at WrestleMania 4. They had been born months earlier, but, you know, their genesis and the breakup and the mat, you know, that,
right,
obviously is the kind of tie that binds these two shows together. The Hogan Savage storyline, which in my opinion, the best example of long-term booking in the history of this industry.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, for those who don't know, when they were celebrating Hogan and Savage at the end of WrestleMania 4, and Savage was elevated to the champion, they knew already at that point that they would be wrestling each other. And by they, I don't mean just Hogan. Obviously, the Vince and the Brain Trust and even Hogan and Savage knew they would be working against each other in the main event the next year.
That's it. I mean,
compare that to now. Do you think they knew that CM Punk and Chris Jericho would be wrestling at this time last year?
Well,
I guess they did know, but hey, I guess to criticize myself there, they did know, they did try it, at least with the Cena and Rock. They did do that.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's true.
So I apologize, WWE.
But here's the thing, though. These days, they only do it when they overtly back themselves into a corner. When they say, this is what we're going to do next year and hype it for a year. What you're talking about was just the opposite, because it was
top secret.
Because it was behind closed doors, it was formulating. Here's the thing, though.
Although, kind of in retrospect, I guess, to me, it was just, and we'll talk about it in detail, though, because it was so well done, just how subtle it was. I mean, when you watch it now, as, you know, like in your early 30s, and you have a greater understanding of the business side, it was very obvious the direction they were going. It was very subtle. Savage was getting irritated with Hogan as it went on, and it boiled.
Yeah, but these things go over the head of most marks in the audience.
That's true, and to your point, though, very clearly, if you would have pulled, and granted, Trump Plaza was not exactly, okay, I don't think exactly many of the people in attendance at Trump Plaza those days are now posting on message boards, okay, but
right,
if you would have pulled people leaving WrestleMania 4, oh, yeah, you know, what do you think the main event of WrestleMania 5 is going to be? I don't think many of them would say, oh, Hogan and Randy are going to wrestle each other. There's going to be a big breakup, and because it was considered shocking when they did it.
It was.
It was the second NBC special.
Right.
And
the build was phenomenal.
And that's another, you know, it was unbelievable. I mean, yeah, it was just so unbelievable. Like I said, best business they ever did. And that's another common link, by the way. NBC, you talk about how, you know, mainstream, I mean, Saturday's Main Event's been a flop when they tried it recent years.
Right.
But the main event, remember those shows were on a Friday?
Yes.
Okay, which is now
prime time.
Yeah, prime time was a one-hour special. They're also linked, and they did them in subsequent years too, but they kept the popularity waned as the years went on.
By the way, this can't be overstated. Sweeps month. That's amazing. They did these in February. Would they have the sack to try it out in sweeps month today? No.
No, they wouldn't. And they did, I mean, like you referred to it in our last podcast. We talked about WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
And I guess that's maybe a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Return to network TV after 30-year absence.
Yeah.
They do the Hogan-Andre rematch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so obviously, you know, the boom period has peaked with WrestleMania 3. What do you do? You know, 87, there was some turnover. There's some new characters introduced. Ted DiBiase, I think, is the most important here for this discussion. And he does the big angle where he wants to buy the chance. That was the big angle in the fall of 87. He's going to do a lot of it. No character, I think, in the history of the company had a better job of building to his first appearance than Ted DiBiase. Do you remember those vignettes?
Yeah.
Those were, when he first stepped foot in front of a live crowd, he was drawing some crazy heat.
Right.
People were just disgusted by this man.
Right.
You know, he was just buying. And then his big angle is he wanted to buy the title from Hogan. Hogan, of course. You know, it's so funny. Like, who would have bought that today? Like, that Hogan was just going to turn over the belt. Remember, he did that big sappy speech, I'm going to have to tell all the Hulkamaniacs and the Million Dollar Man. He's like, hell no. You remember that?
It's embarrassing to admit how late it was in my adolescence where I was still a mark. But suffice it to say, I was still a mark in the fall of 87, and yet...
You believed it, didn't you?
No.
You thought he was going to sell the title.
No, but here's the thing. I was like, hey, he must make a buttload of money being champion. I don't think he could probably afford to buy the belt. That was how I looked at it as a mark.
My one buddy Josh, I don't even remember, it's always funny. He's like, he's like, talking about something that no one would ever buy today. This hick Ted DiBiase is the Million Dollar Man. Give me a break.
That's true, yeah.
Even though they did a great job. One of the great things about that Ted DiBiase character, he headlined a Hall of Fame thing. So, I mean, he's gotten his just desserts.
Right.
But the way that character came about, remember the famous thing that he told, the story that's been told, Pat Patterson just kind of gave him a very cryptic phone call because, he was bouncing around, hey, you want to come to work for us?
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you a great gimmick. We're not going to tell you what it is, but I'll let you know that Vince McMahon said himself, if he were to be a wrestler, this would be his gimmick.
Quick backup for a second. The UWF had gone under, was bought out by Crockett, and he was faced with having to go to Crockett, which he wasn't much looking forward to doing. Go back to what you're...
Good, thank you for that.
So
they bring him in, and like I said, no character ever in the history of the company has ever been introduced as well as Ted DiBiase was as the Million Dollar Man. And they, do you know what's great, too? And they kind of did this with JBL, too, they allowed him to live the gimmick. Kayfabe was so big.
Right.
They put him up in awesome hotels and gave him a ton of money. He said it was great. I think he used a lot of that money on blow, quite frankly, but
yes.
That's okay. I mean, that's all right. I'm not going to criticize the man. So he factored in, and it all led to NBC, Hogan-Andre the rematch. Andre had come back at Survivor Series, which had been introduced, wins the match. He's the sole survivor. They did a count-out thing with Hogan, and they build this rematch. And Andre, Hogan had been, he was untouchable. By that point, it was like, what else could you do with him? I think you had to take the title off him at that point.
I was still shocked at the time, though. I still
That's
didn't see it coming.
I remember as a kid, and, I was still, at the time when that happened, I was 7 years old. So, I'd like to see Hogan expand his offensive repertoire in this match, okay? But they do the big, the evil, the Heppner thing was great, how they kept that under wraps.
Yep.
That was great. Because what's funny is, I guess the more skilled or person, I had not started watching the NWA yet at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was still young. And, Earl Heppner was a referee in the NWA.
Mm-hmm.
And, Dave Heppner, who's the least famous brother now, but he was there first in WWF. Was there, and that was, they kept that under wraps. They do the twin referees angle where, he bought this fake, evil twin of Dave Heppner, who by the way was then just allowed to work for the next, 15 years of the company, which makes no sense, but that's okay. And, they do that. Hogan gets his shoulder up, the ref counts to three anyway. It was a screw job done to get the title off of Hogan. Andre gives the DiBiase, everyone knows this, belt's declared vacant. So it was interesting for WrestleMania 4. Tournaments historically in this country have never sold well on pay-per-view.
Right.
Because people want to know what they're getting. And a tournament, there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, they did have Hogan. They did, Hogan-Andre was kind of the de facto, although it was a second-round match, it went to a non-finish. Was the de facto, it was the sell job. It was on the front of the tape, if you remember.
Sure.
It was their third match. It is an atrocious match, okay?
Right.
In any sense. I mean,
double DQ.
Yeah, I mean, it was really bad. It was, God, is it?
Which had to be an extra shock to everybody in attendance.
Oh, yeah.
Or watching on TV, rather.
I think, and I remember this, when I was, I think it was probably just assumed by a lot of the, the mark, and most people, Hogan would just win the belt back.
Right.
It's not like, the internet was around and people like,
right,
were like, he's not going to win the belt back. He's going to film No Holds Barred this summer. What I'm saying? So, I think just the way that Hogan was booked, it was so shocking when he lost on NBC that a lot of people just assumed, hey, he'll probably win the title back. Now, what's interesting is the original booking, if you listen to everyone. Mm-hmm. Ted DiBiase was supposed to win this tournament, which is shocking to me that they would put like that era that a heel would go over and win the title at WrestleMania. Well,
here's something that's interesting. Yeah,
Savage was not supposed to get the title until Summer because they were going to create SummerSlam,
yeah.
And Savage was going to win the title then.
But here's the thing, and we talk about the main event and a match on there that nobody remembers that had so much to do with the eventual outcome of WrestleMania. Savage and what was supposed to be the blow-off of his feud against the Honky Tonk Man. Remember
now we're going back to NBC in February.
NBC, yeah, in February. That, remember, the Mega Powers were first born from Honky Tonk Man and the Hart Foundation teaming up on Savage. Elizabeth goes back to the locker room. This is in the fall of 87, gets Hogan, handshake her around the world.
After a slow summer, this kind of re-energized things. This was like the big program they came up with. Although it was very lukewarm at first. They really didn't do anything together.
Right, right. They didn't do a whole lot together, but he was supposed to get the blow-off win. Honky Tonk was like, no, I don't think so. I'm leaving and I'm taking the belt to WCW.
Yeah, I never understood how he had the capital to do that. I guess his contract was running out before then. And
I guess.
But shame on me for not knowing. But yeah,
Honky backed them down.
Yeah, Honky Tonk Man basically changed the direction of 1988 WWF, where he refused to do the job. They just did a count out. Savage won by count out. And then Honky kind of, who had been really hot his first 10 months as the Intercontinental Champion, working against Savage in the house shows, really cool from there, kind of cool off. They just they were looking to job him from there on out. I'm sure to somebody was going to originally be Beefcake and wound up being the Warrior,
right?
But yeah, it's interesting how that was the impetus for changing the direction of 1988 WWF.
Yeah.
And you know what is unfair as it was to Ted DiBiase. You know, people always want things to be fair, and you know, being a Republican, you don't care about meritocracy. I mean,
true.
Okay,
life is not fair.
Yes. It works a lot better than that.
Sure, it does.
Let me tell you something. I don't care. I'm a big Ted DiBiase fan. The guy had a great run.
Right.
People can't understand because the way there's two world titles now, anytime anyone shows anything decent, you got to put a belt on him. You got to give him credit. Look, man, that's not the way it was. It was very hard to be a world champion back then. It was much better that he did not win this. The synergy and the symmetry or whatever.
At that time, I think subsequently, and keeping in mind heels at that time could only be transitional champions, I think he would have made an amazing transitional champion 2 years down the road, but you couldn't do it then, and you couldn't do it coming out of Mania because it was unheard of for a heel to come out of Mania.
That shocked me when I first read that. I'm like, God, they were going to put that, like, that year, like, people don't understand, like, every WWE show.
Yeah.
You know, the first Survivor Series, I guess, Andre kind of wins, but Hogan gets his heat back at the end.
Right.
But every show had a very warm and fuzzy ending.
Right.
To it, with WWE, the big pay-per-view.
That's true. Even a wrestling classic.
Yeah. I mean, they always had warm and fuzzy feelings. So it shocks me that they were going to go in that direction. Now, a lot of that had to go with, I believe, DiBiase was promised the title when he came in.
He might have been. But see, with Savage, they had to make a promise to trump that because Savage, again, and I understand this completely, Savage was old school and was enraged by Honky's power play.
Yeah.
So they had to calm him down.
Yeah.
And what trumps winning the IC title, winning the actual big belt.
Yeah, and it works because what's interesting is I don't know what they would have done with the IC. Would they have done world champion versus IC champion at the first SummerSlam? I mean, this is kind of going off the beaten path.
Presumably, I mean, that's the interesting thing.
It would have been a bizarre setup, I mean, to have him lose the Intercontinental and then, you know.
Yeah, but that happened with Bret Hart right before he won the big belt. It was
it was a little different because Bret Hart had a Broadway match, and it was also a very knee-jerk, not long-term thinking move to put the title on him. It was a little different.
You're right.
They were not going to give Savage some sort of platform to have this broad. I mean, everyone knew he was a great worker anyway. I mean, a lot of people knew Bret Hart was too at the time when he wrestled Davey, but still, it's a little different. But
they might have gone title for title and then just vacated the IC afterwards.
Which is what they did with Hogan and Warrior,
yeah.
But I think it's important, too, because you know, I referenced the History of WrestleMania DVD earlier, and a story that they predictably did not tell about WrestleMania 4 that I think we should reference because I think it's the big storyline is the what would happen on the other channel. Okay, the Clash of Champions was born. Okay, that's very important. You know, at this point, WWE was clearly number one. They were crushing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The NWE took about the failed UWF angle. They didn't do anything with it. I know you love Ronnie Garvin. He was a terrible champion. Okay, Starrcade.
The booking was horrible.
Okay, Starrcade 87 stunk. Okay, it was a terrible start. Okay, they took it out of the Carolinas for the first time, put it in Chicago, which was one of my favorite cities, might be my favorite city in this country. But Stargate 87 stunk. They did a dusty finish with the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
No one, the crowd was booing the hell out of Garvin against Flair in the cage. So McMahon had jerked the show, too, had killed it on pay-per-view by putting the Survivor Series on.
Right.
He then killed their next pay-per-view, the awful Bunkhouse Stampede, by right. putting the Royal Rumble on for free on right. USA. Did a monster number on
Created
USA.
Created that, yep.
And then, Jimmy Crockett decided, hey, you know, I'm going to fight back a little bit.
Right.
And I'm going to put on the Clash of Champions. You know, obviously Flair and Sting do the famous 45-minute match. From a wrestling perspective, it's no-brainer which show is better. I mean, the first Clash, 3 out of 5 matches hit 4 stars, for God's sake.
Well, they played to their strengths.
Yes.
Because they were the work-rate promotion.
They did, and it was a viable alternative.
Mm-hmm.
It did kind of work a little bit. They tried it again the next year with an even better match
yeah.
with Flair Steel, and that did not work. I mean,
right.
they got crushed.
Well, George Scott was booking at the time,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, so, I mean, they got crushed when they tried doing that, and then that was the end of them trying to, you know, fight fire with fire. But I think that's an important story that needs to be told, is the whole Clash of Champions
right.
On opposition. And WrestleMania 4 is, you know, we talk about kind of WrestleMania 2 as a definite step back from 1. Everyone will say 4 is a definite step back from 3.
Huge step
yeah,
back.
Yeah, major step back. Although, a lot of people have called this one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. I'm not going to go that far. 5 is really hated. I think that has a lot to do with Meltzer. A lot of, you know, Meltzer says something and then the sheep
right.
will follow. You know, I think he called WrestleMania 5 the worst one ever. So, you know, if a guy like Dave
right.
Meltzer says that, everyone's like, yeah, WrestleMania 5 sucks. Yeah, it's the worst. And it does kind of suck, but I actually hate the Skydome WrestleManias, just a little tease.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the Skydome WrestleManias more than the Trump WrestleManias.
Interesting. Well, the thing of it is that the 88 and 89 shows have a nostalgia value that the crappy ones of the next couple of years don't have.
Yes, yes.
Who pines for WrestleMania 7?
It's...
Who pines for WrestleMania 9?
Well, no.
Who
yeah.
pines for WrestleMania 11? Those do not and never will have
that's what I'm
nostalgia
saying, like,
value.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, I'm not going to sit here and defend the wrestling
right.
on these shows or, you know, the booking of these shows.
The work rate sucked,
yeah,
but these guys were over.
But I can. But as far as shows with bad wrestling goes,
right.
I'd much rather watch these than shows maybe with a little bit of wrestling.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean,
definitely.
Know, and but back to 4, we should. I mean, we've kind of hit on. We've kind of framed it, I think, well enough here with Hogan Savage. You know, they come in, and the whole thing with 4 is they WrestleMania 4 was a vehicle, quite simply, to have someone fill the void that of Hogan's app. Of you know, they were clear. They were just. They needed to put somebody the title on somebody new, and Hogan was going to be gone for the summer to film
right.
his first movie, No Holds Barred. And Randy Savage ends up being the choice. And while the tournament itself, from an individual parts perspective, is bad, it is one of the worst major tournaments ever.
14 guys. I wouldn't have done it with that. I'd have gone with 7. Keeping in mind,
Hogan
and Andre had the first round
14
bye.
Seems, I don't know, they were very excessive. It was the 80s, you know. But as a vehicle to get Randy Savage over, this show works.
You're telling me you couldn't have dropped Dino Bravo, Butch Reed, One Man Gang.
Well, there's always going to be dregs
Hercules.
Of the draw. Hercules wasn't in the tournament. It was a solo match.
Oh, that's right. That's
yeah.
right. That's right. In 1988, 4 years before becoming PWI Rookie of the Year. But, no, these...
That's unbelievable.
Newest recurring motif.
That's a good gimmick.
Thank
that's a good,
you.
That's a good gimmick.
Thank you.
The last yeah. one, I was kind of like, okay, we're going to keep doing that. Now it's just good.
Exactly.
Okay, now it's good.
It reaches a tipping point for Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes, it's
yeah.
gotten over, okay?
It has.
At first, we didn't think it was going to work, but
it
God,
has.
Ricky's really got this gimmick
it
over.
It has, yeah, exactly. But, I'm like Dusty
look,
Rhodes with the polka dots here, but Greg Valentine. Now, I know he made it through the first round, but Greg Valentine was working his way down the card by 88, definitively.
Excuse me.
So...
You're right. A lot of the guys were not in. All right, we'll talk about the tournament first, too.
Because you could have let the matches breathe a little bit. You wouldn't have liked to see.
They did. Well, here's the problem.
DiBiase, Bigelow, breathe. That's what I'm talking about. Now, they didn't wrestle each other,
yeah.
but I mean, as a match. Don Morocco, well down the card by this time.
Yeah, well, he had kind of recently turned face. He had Superstar Graham with him. But here's the thing. the individual pieces, and I can go through this in frightening fashion. Okay, mm-hmm. DiBiase. All right, here's the thing. Again, you have to understand. I mean, the only other tournament that they did on pay-per-view was the Deadly Game one, Survivor Series 98.
Okay.
Another tournament that was bereft of good matches.
Okay.
I could make a case that the wrestling was actually worse in that tournament than it was in this one. But
the booking was phenomenal, though.
Yes, with The Rock.
Booking was apex.
Yes. It was probably the one time Vince Russo actually booked something properly.
Right. That was his Mona Lisa.
Yeah. Just like here, though, the booking was good here, too. And that's what... Now, my criticism kind of is a smart mark, is that they didn't do the set. You know, it was funny. Steamboat references is in his DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And they even teased it, I remember, on the syndication building up to this, mm-hmm. is there was no Savage Steamboat rematch. I remember looking at the brackets.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had Steamboat Valentine and Savage Reed. And you're right, Valentine was kind of being pushed down the card anyway.
Right.
So I remember looking at that and kind of picking up. I was like, oh, man. And I was like, that would be great to do Savage Steamboat in a rematch.
Yeah.
And it would have worked. Savage could have got his heat back. But
they should have. They should have because – but here's the thing. I think it was one of the examples in this era. Once in a while you would see it of the vindictiveness of Vince. Steamboat wants to leave to be with his wife and kid. We'll beat him with a guy who's not even top of the card. I'm convinced that's absolutely. We'll beat him with a guy who doesn't mean as much.
People need to know this. This was his final appearance.
Yes.
Steamboat. And he did not send people out in it because you're right. From his perspective,
yeah.
And I will, although it works against what I wanted to see as a consumer, I will defend him a little bit.
Yeah.
He just would never, ever, especially in this era.
Right.
When there was another place to work, and it's kind of funny because he went on to become champion in NWA anyway, but he would never allow a guy to have a little bit of spotlight on the way out.
Jobbing to Steamboat would be going out in a blaze of glory, or to Savage would be going out in a blaze of glory.
Well, I guess Piper, kind of, that was a little different circumstances, though.
He didn't know Piper was leaving.
Yeah, and he knew, and he also was knew that Piper was not going to go work for the competition.
Right.
But he went to go do a movie.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, the individual matches here,
mm-hmm.
if you look at more bad, DiBiase, Duggan, certainly not at the level of their Mid-South match three years earlier, okay?
That thing needed to be a tuxedo death match.
Bravo, Morocco, you know, that the stinks.
One-man gang, Bigelow.
Bigelow was hurt. It was bad on paper. But here's something interesting, too.
Savage Reed.
Well, again, there's going to be guys that have no chance in a tournament.
Right.
And I mean, Savage, obviously, you know. Reed, like I said, I mean, he kind of got pushed at the end of 87, but, you know, yeah, obviously, okay.
Heard the urban legend that he, like, flaked out or something? He
that's
was supposed
not
to be
true.
The guy to beat Steamboat
that's
for the IC?
Not
that's
true.
Not true?
Because okay. Somebody pointed out once that, you know, remember they used to do those celebrations in the locker room when they'd win the title?
Yeah.
And the heel Butch Reed was there when the Honky Tonk Man celebrated.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that was kind of debunked.
That wasn't like CGI that they put him in later to
I
debunk
don't know.
It?
Yeah, I don't know who did. But you're right. You know, Steamboat Valentine's a pretty good match.
Okay.
Obviously, it was not, you know, it's good, but I would have obviously. And here's the thing, too. The booking of this, there are a lot of flaws. One thing, and I didn't know, obviously didn't know at the time, didn't you think Bam Bam Bigelow... Go back to young Mark Rick Moore, 1988
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah.
Didn't you think Bigelow was going to make...
If yeah.
Here's the thing. I even think over Savage, if you were to tell me, okay, who is the baby face that could win this if not Hogan? Bigelow have been the guy? He got a monster push when he first came in. People forgot. I mean, it was... He... Remember the first Survivor Series? It comes down to him and Andre at the end. And it was him. It was Bigelow. It's him against Gang, Bundy, and Andre. Mm-hmm. 1-on-3. He eliminates Bundy, eliminates Gang... And the crowd, like, bought him as going to beat Andre.
Yeah.
He was hurt. I think this was his final appearance, too. I think there was a contract issue. So they just beat him.
Well, yeah, because by the end of the year, he would be in
a terrible run in NWA.
Yeah, it was horrible.
He was kind of immature, though, and I think he was partying a lot.
Actually, come to think of it, I'm looking at a number of guys here. Reed, Bigelow. Steamboat. There's a lot of guys that they were going to go to Crockett.
Within a year, heck.
It wasn't Crockett anymore. But.
Yeah, but within a couple weeks, they were gone out of the promotion. Yeah, Steamboat, this was it for him.
Yeah.
Reed, never did anything after this. Bigelow, yeah, never did anything after this. Here's another reason why I think they should have done Savage Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just kind of fast forward to the booking, okay?
Yeah.
Hogan and Andre go to their double DQ. Which was shocking at the time. They're both out of the tournament.
I bet that really deflated the crowd.
It did. It absolutely did. Mm-hmm. I remember it absolutely did. and it kind of opened the top half of the bracket, if you've got your bracket handy, following us at home, for DiBiase. It was very obvious.
I want to know who Palm and Lunardi had slotted coming out of the top region.
Okay, yes. It was very obvious then that DiBiase was going to the finals. He only had to beat the – here's very curious, too. He only had to beat the Rock. The booking – once Hogan and Andre, the double DQ hit, all of a sudden, it just like – you're thinking to yourself, oh, boy. Like, it was very obvious that it was Savage and DiBiase was going to be your finals. Like, the next two rounds were worthless. And granted, there were some buys involved, but follow me here.
Okay.
You had DiBiase versus Don Morocco, winner goes to the finals. Did anyone, I don't care, the most ardent babyface mark, and they did not buy Morocco beating DiBiase, okay? Right. That was a spot that I think if Bigelow was in, would have been a little more believable, I think, if the switch up some of the booking. Like, DiBiase versus Bigelow, winner goes to the finals with him better, okay? But obviously DiBiase wins, and he's in the finals then, okay?
Or Steamboat, if they'd have had the balls to do that.
Okay, that's true, too. But here's what I would have liked to see. DiBiase versus Bigelow in that spot, okay? Mm-hmm. And then DiBiase wins, he goes to the finals. At that point, there's only, the way it played out, one babyface left in the tournament, Savage. So, I mean, from their perspective, they wanted to put him against all odds, you know, get everyone behind him.
Sure.
But it would have been a lot more intrigue had it been Savage Steamboat instead of Savage Valentine.
Right.
In the second round.
Sure.
Because what's interesting is I'll never forget, this kind of kills the tournament for me, is Jesse Ventura during the Savage Valentine match, because the gang, one-man gang, he won. Jake Roberts and Rick Rude, by the way, do the most shameless 15-minute time limit draw of all time. It is the most awful, boring match. I mean, it's basically a headlock for 15 minutes.
Just rest holds and stuff?
Yeah, it's terrible. So the gang had gotten this bye. They did some byes. So you got to remember there's byes. And Ventura goes, oh, yeah, you know, if Valentine beats Savage here, that'd be a real interesting semifinal. Greg Valentine versus the one-man gang. And you sit to yourself, you're like, give me a break. You know, come on. They're not going to do Greg Valentine versus the one-man gang, winner gets DiBiase in the final.
You know what that is? That's Jesse's mischievous nature there.
Oh, like, well, I'm not faulting him, but I'm just saying, like, from my perspective, it's like...
No, but doesn't that sound like something he would do just to sabotage it? Just to, like... Let me just throw out this ridiculous thing expose how stupid it
is. Yeah, for sure, But at that point, it's very obvious. The booking just, like, after, like I said, so this the first round was kind of interesting. All the guys, you know, they come out the first time. But after that, it's just like, come on, get to the Savage DiBiase final. None of the matches in the tournament were good.
Right.
I mean, none. I mean, the Savage or Steamboat Valentine hit 3 stars. I think I would give that 3 stars. It's the best match of the tournament.
Of the other titles here that we're at for, Honky Tonk Man limps in with the title. Interestingly enough, for a guy who was in the doghouse for the way that he held them up, hangs on to the belt, losing by disqualification to Brutus Beefcake. They did the angle with Jimmy Hart and Peggy Sue, so he hangs on to the belt.
The big draw here was, you know, Beefcake wanting to cut his hair. And he winds up cutting Jimmy Hart's hair.
Right.
But here's the thing. They did a little rehabilitation because Beefcake he'd been booked pretty well. He had kind of won his feud with Greg Valentine after the Dream Team breakup. I think they thought he probably wasn't ready to be the Intercontinental Champion. It was their plan originally to make him but they wanted to kind of put him over here, and then he was supposed to get it at SummerSlam.
Right.
But then, you know, they decided to go with the Ultimate Warrior instead. But, so that's why they did that finish. Because you're right. You would think that Vince would be like, F you, Honky, you're jobbing now.
Right.
But he didn't, and yeah, he kind of held on. Yeah, so.
Well, the other one, too, another, you know, and this is a very...
The heat was kind of gone after this, though, for Honky.
He
kind of made his great... After this, it was just kind of a matter of time until he lost the belt.
He was limping through. Very trivial piece of commonality between the two WrestleManias at Trump here. Coming in to 4 as the tag team champion Strikeforce, Martel and Santana losing to Demolition, setting them up for their monster run on top and sowing the seeds of what would happen a year later, the breakup of Strikeforce and the birth of the model Rick Martel. Very interesting. Strikeforce represented at both WrestleManias.
Yeah, and also interesting here is that at the same time Demolition was winning the titles, I think somebody matched this up once, Tully and Arn were losing the NWA titles to Luger and Wyndham at the first clash. Who would beat Demolition for the titles? By the way, you talk about something that I don't understand why that this is never mentioned. How unbelievable is Demolition's title run here?
Yeah.
They had the belts. You talk about commonality again, and five. They win the titles at four. They walk into WrestleMania 5 as the champs. They win their they held the titles for almost 18 months. And this was not this was not the Paul London, Brian Kendrick era of tag team wrestling when they had no
one
else.
Under the radar. Yeah,
they were on all the major shows.
Yeah,
the peak of tag team wrestling in that company probably with they had the most over teams. I mean, you could debate, you know, maybe here and there, but
might have headlined the Stray B show.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. And they held it for like 15, 18 months. Ricky, but Tully and Arn were the guys to wrap that up.
They were,
Demolition.
And as we get into five, I want to talk about that little bit of a migration of NWA guys after the takeover by Turner. Tully and Arn were part of that, Ronnie Garvin, et cetera. We'll get to that as part of the story of five. Not that they played in huge on that card.
Was the talent roster noticeably different from five, four to five?
It was in some ways.
You know what? It was.
The guys we talked about who left.
There was a big, in 88, Survivor Series 88, I think Vince gave a lot of pink slips to guys. Like Don Morocco's, your JYD's.
Boss Man's another guy who made his way up here. He was part of the Twin Towers at WrestleMania 5. The Sheepherders turned Bushwhackers were part of that migration. They had their first WrestleMania at 5. Just going on down the list here, Ronnie Garvin, he was in a throwaway against Dino Bravo.
Oh,
Brainbusters, of course, defeating Strike Force in the match where they broke up. So you had Terry Taylor came in subsequently.
Al Snow, that really worked well, didn't it?
Kurt Hennig coming from the AWA. Yeah, exactly. And Al, I keep saying, I got to get Al Snow booked for the show, and I'm so having you on, even if it's just to ambush Al.
Okay.
wait, did I say that into an open mic?
Yes, I love that. But, yeah, I mean, and yeah, Demolition. Do you know what's interesting, too, is with Strikeforce, the live crowd, I remember kind of woke up for that Demolition Strikeforce match.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of cheering down. I remember there was a pretty big pop when the heel Demolition won that title. And they didn't turn them face for months down the road.
Yeah.
So.
And it was in a weird kind of a way at the Survivor Series, the double turn with Fuji and the Powers of Pain.
And what's funny is Strikeforce was a very transitional team. It's funny we talked about how in our
we're
WrestleMania...
We're going to strike with such force.
Yes. How in WrestleMania 3, our podcast, we talked about how... when it was the Can-Am Connection, Martel and Zink, the plans were kind of put them the title, and then, you know, Zink leaves, they put Santana, and they put the titles on the midway.
Kept the same plans,
But what's interesting is, if you watch, like, the first Survivor Series and the booking after that, where Demolition was put over pretty strong, beating up, like, Billy Jack Haynes and Ken Patera, the decision, I think, by the time Strikeforce wins the titles, the decision that Demolition would be the next champ, I think, was already made. I mean, they're... You could never hold off on that title change as long as they did then today. Like, it would, like, was there anyone in the building that gave Strikeforce a chance of winning that match?
No.
You know, I mean, there was, I mean, they drew no heat coming to the ring. I mean, they drew, I mean, again, the venue is a problem, but they drew no heat. Everyone in America knew Demolition was getting the belts there. They did, and then they hold them forever.
For a team that was blatantly, and I say this as a huge LOD mark, blatantly a Road Warrior ripoff team. Vince's way of sticking it to them and being spiteful when he couldn't sign them away. Boy, by sheer force of will, over the course of a year, he got those guys over.
Demolition is awesome. I think Demolition is very... Look, it's unfortunate that their legacy has kind of been painted because the Road Warriors have somewhat of a positive relationship with WWE, you know, the Laurinaitis family. And, you know, but... The way Demolition's legacy is painted is, oh, they're Road Warriors ripoffs. And they are Road Warriors ripoffs, okay? There's no two ways about it.
You're right, though, that at their peak, they got past it.
Dude, they were really over as a babyface team. Again, organic face team. Fans liked them, even when they were heels.
They were. You know, the big thing connecting 4 and 5, and I want to use this here to kind of segue here. We were talking about this. I find this fascinating because you and I have said until we're blue in the face and little guy back in the day on SNS here, long-term build, planning, whatever, mania to mania. I love that stuff. I totally love that stuff. But I'm in awe in particular of this because how do you balance, Kyle Ross? If you know walking out of four that your two top baby faces are going to square off at five, How do you establish Randy Savage? Because he, keep in mind how much house shows still meant at that time.
And him and DiBiase did good business in the house shows after this.
They did pretty good business.
Better than pretty good.
I mean, it wasn't on the level that Hogan was drawing.
It was better than expected. I know that the story is that everyone was very happy with the business they drew.
How do you? Well, at least the first timer. I think they by SummerSlam. I think they burned it out.
Yeah, but they did that good cage match. You know, for instance. Yeah.
But how do you? I'm in awe of this. How do you simultaneously establish a guy to fill the impossible shoes, and yet be planting the seeds to where eventually people will turn against him and go with Hogan? That has got to be like juggling chainsaws to do that in the course of a year.
Well, they
to
took,
get a guy to fill those shoes and then be positioning him in the long run to turn it all around.
Here's
again.
What they did. Hogan was taken off TV for the summer of it because he was doing the movie.
Right.
So he was gone.
Right.
And they brought him back for SummerSlam. Remember, they were, Savage is like, oh, I'll take you, because he gets jumped by Andre and DiBiase.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I'm going to find a partner. Gee, I wonder who he's going to pick.
Yeah.
And so he was gone, and Savage kind of had the platform himself to get over. But as soon as they brought Hogan, they win the SummerSlam match. And then from there, they very gradually started kind of doing the
even
turn.
Even there, they did the whole thing of like, you know, when he's a... There was some kind of look that he gave Hogan.
It was at the Survivor Series, this was.
Well, I think part, like, or even Elizabeth disrobed to the,
the bikini bottom. The
bikini,
yeah.
And it was like,
I think Hogan put her on his shoulders, and I think he did give a subtle look.
Look. And that was, you could do a lot with a look. But again, though, it was so subtle at that time, and this proves how good they were at doing stuff. You didn't have, as would be the case today, You'd have Michael Cole with his imbecilic commentary about what this means. I don't think Gorilla Monsoon,
well, who was not always the most observant announcer anyway,
right? But he got the big things over. Monsoon or whoever it was, they didn't start picking up on seeds of things with Randy Savage until the right time.
Well, Ventura was kind of the first, because he was trying to be an ass.
Well, that's true.
He was kind of trying to be a prick about it. But remember the babyface announcer, like, no, you're out of line. Like, how dare you say that?
But even, I don't think as far back as SummerSlam, Jesse was on that.
It wasn't until...
But you're right, though. Jesse was the instigator.
The way it progressed was... Survivor Series, like Hogan was kind of they did the angle, he was handcuffed, Savage was getting beat up by the Twin Towers, and Hogan breaks free, it's kind of comical, and saves the day, and they're the survivors in the main event. They kind of are giving each other dirty looks, then it rolls into the Royal Rumble where Hogan accidentally eliminates Savage. That's when Jesse really picked up on it.
Right.
Because I remember the night that they wrestle the Twin Towers on NBC where they do the big breakup, they had this video, and Big Man's like, see, Jesse, what great friends these guys are. You know, they did like this. It is a really campy video, too, by the way.
I just wish they would have, like, dancing around a flower patch, just gone all the way with it.
Oh, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. You're right. They would have screwed this up today.
They would have
screwed this up.
Yeah, because it had to be done with the subtlety and everything like that. That's one of the things about Jesse, is that people talk about all the things that he was good at. When you look at that, when you look at Hogan Andre, he was so good at playing the instigator for turns. There was a little bit of that, I think, even with Hogan and Orndorff going back. Jesse was so good.
He was
good.
Involved in that. It was more Adrian Adonis
true.
Still, he was involved. But, yeah.
Boy, he was good in that role.
Yeah, he was. I mean,
so stirring the pot, setting the stage for turns, and telegraphing the things that needed to be telegraphed when a turn was coming, particularly a turn on Hogan.
Yeah, because he always would try to, like, downplay Hogan.
Yeah.
He didn't like him anyway.
Yeah,
so it was
really. Yeah.
But,
shoot and work.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it obviously worked, and they did the, you know, we talk about the number that Hogan and Andre did at NBC. The next year did a very good number as well, too.
Right.
With the Savage turn, it is Savage's finest hour.
Right.
No pun intended. It's an hour show. And he cuts the promo of his life. You know,
right.
First of all, today it would, of course, be, you know, people would go off how Hogan still wins the match after Savage leaves him high and dry. But... You know, Savage cuts the promo of his life backstage after the match. You got jealous eyes and stuff like that. Just beats the crap out of Hogan right in front of Elizabeth. It's unbelievable. And, you know, it rolls into WrestleMania 5. It was obviously they needed to do big business, and it was clearly the match they wanted to do. They had planned it. It worked perfectly. It's funny that I think in retrospect, people have come to the decision, oh, Savage was so hot that nowadays they probably would not have taken the title off of him right away.
You're right.
In this era of but then it was the very logical way to go.
You know what it would have been? It would have been Hogan wins by countout, like Lex Luger 93 SummerSlam. Balloons coming from the ceiling.
Yes, yes, yeah. It would
the next week on TV, you find out he doesn't have the belt.
It would be. You're right. In this era, but back then, you know, Hogan, it was clearly the only way to go with Hogan getting the title from him. So I'm not going to be hindsight.
I think they figured that would still leave you some heat for the rematches for the house shows and everything like that, and it didn't represent the end. I mean,
no,
there was enough juice left in
Savage
the rhyme.
Savage was still very over in 89. He main evented. They did another tag
for those
match.
Friggin' Zeus matches. I mean, if there was enough juice left.
Yeah,
that's
something we
feud.
Can get to. Yeah, that was a huge flop in 89, the Hogan Zeus feud.
Yeah,
but coming out of the No Holds Barred movie, obviously.
Right.
But it was a very just linear. They were all on the same page. It was very well done, and the booking of WrestleMania 4 and 5 was great. Now the individual matches, you know, I think we skipped a few in 4. I think it should be pointed out Bad News Brown winning. You talk about the new influx of talent.
Yes, yes.
He wins a battle royal. Bret Hart kind of turns babyface.
Big historical significance.
The
booking of it was goofy. Really goofy as far as who should have been the babyface coming out of that.
Yeah, it was weird because Brett, it wasn't like people were really clamoring right away. It was a mid-card feud. They worked against each other. But, you know, it wasn't until like down the road, actually, in 88, that the Harts really turned. They did this thing where Jimmy Hart would come out to manage them and go away, you know. Because it was funny because Neidhart was in the match too, obviously. He was eliminated way earlier. It was bizarre to do, but what's great about it is battle royals generally stink anyway, but if you look at the people in that battle royal, he was like the one new guy in there, and it was good because he feuded with Savage in late, and that was a kind of an underrated feud.
You know what's funny? They had a handful of matches on house shows, I think even in Cleveland, like right after Savage turned. Those were heel versus heel matches on top for a brief moment.
Okay, I was going to say, because the one that is available, like it was released on like one of those best of WWF Coliseum video things, they wrestle in Hamilton right before the turn. It's a street fight.
Okay.
There's a table involved. It's a Harlem street fight.
Okay.
And, for people who weren't around them, they did a pretty cool angle to set the whole thing up where Bad News Brown, he was undefeated. He was calling Savage out. He beats up Jack Tunney, grabs Jack Tunney by the tie, and accuses Elizabeth of doing favors. You know, that was about as suggestive as they got during that period.
Right.
And that set Savage off. You know, he demanded that Brown not get suspended so he could wrestle him. So, you know, that was kind of, again, you talk about what Savage was doing. He kind of had his own thing going. Well, because Hogan, the Hogan and the Boss Man had that big, a big angle. When Hogan came back, Savage kind of had his own thing, but he also, you know, there was carryover too. But yeah, so there was a battle royal. But the rest of WrestleMania 4, what else is there? Ultimate Warrior Hercules, blink and you'll miss it. That's a terrible match.
Islanders and Heenan against Bulldogs and Coco Beware.
You know, we talked about the Bulldogs being shunted down the card.
Yeah.
This was it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were still around for a few months after this. I mean, they famously got in that backstage fight with the Rougeaus later in the year.
Right.
But, Coco Beware. I mean, this was, to lose pretty clean to Bobby Heenan.
Right. I don't think there were any other matches on here aside from that. Now, in the Battle Royal, and this is just what I find weird, because, again, big historical significance. It represents the genesis, as you said, not all in one night, but the genesis of the Bret Hart turn. But here's the thing. As far as that goes, this is what I just find bizarre. And maybe this is me being wrestling nerd, picking apart the whole thing here. If we're to boil down to this, Bret Hart's turn, Bret Hart being wronged, stems from Bret Hart's belief that there should be honor among thieves.
Oh, here we go.
I don't get that. I just absolutely don't get that. That him and Bad News shook hands or whatever. And
well, I think he's just mad that he got, lost.
Exactly.
I mean, you're looking a little too much at it.
I probably am.
But
historical significance also when you look at 5, the WrestleMania debuts of two of the all-time greats, You had under the mask of the Blue Blazer, Owen Hart and Shawn Michaels in the tag match, the Rockers, he and Jannetty against the
Twin
Towers.
Oh, we didn't even bring them up, too. There was a significant turnover in 88. They did bring in a lot of new talent. And I think we need to point out with WrestleMania 5 before we kind of like maybe get into something. We can breeze because there was not a lot to sink your teeth into in the undercard. That is the definition of a one-match show that drew the number and everything else. It's kind of like, oh, okay, this is fun. Yeah, I like this guy.
Jake Andre was a hot shot thing, Fear of Snakes, after John Studd left. John Studd, lest we forget, won the Royal Rumble in 89.
Well, no, he was brought in. They did that angle before. Studd was the referee for that match.
Oh, he was still around for that?
Yeah, Studd. Yeah. The angle was...
I thought he left already. Okay, my memory's
shot. He left right after.
That.
No, what okay. they did is... Okay. What they did is... The Jake Andre angle, they shot it in the fall of 88.
Okay.
It was huge. I mean, that was like their big angle in the fall of 88.
All right. My bad.
And then Studd comes in and wins the Rumble.
Oh, yeah. Special guest ref.
Yeah, he's the special guest ref to kind of play up his old feud with Andre. They switch sides. John Studd was a disaster when he came in. He was terrible.
Right.
But
God rest his soul.
Yeah, he was a bad baby face. God. And Andre didn't like him, didn't want to work with him anymore. So it just didn't work. But with WrestleMania 5, it started a three-year trend of WrestleManias where there was like 14 matches on the card. None of them were particularly good.
Right.
And they didn't have a lot of, you know, we talk about WrestleMania 3, the programs that we can remember, how they were shot. You know, there were not a lot of, I mean, you look
Who
at WrestleMania
5. Who can
forget
that epic, legendary Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Bad News Brown program?
I mean,
program.
WrestleMania 4 was different in that there were some existing programs they couldn't do a lot with because they just did a tournament. So that's different.
Right.
These were, Matt, and the thing is they had the Rockers and the Brainbusters were feuding before WrestleMania 5. They don't work against each other at the show.
Right.
They were in separate matches. I don't know if it's because that would have left Strikeforce to wrestle the Twin Towers. And, you know, the Strikeforce thing kind of falls a little flat because they'd just done the Mega Powers. And it would have been the same, like, it would have been like the Twin Towers would have had the same exact match, you know, where the heel walks out on his partner. That kind of fell a little flat, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked. I mean, Martel was pretty over, but...
Right.
But, I mean, if you go through those matches, WrestleMania 5, there weren't a lot of... I mean, you know, you have, like, Hercules, King Haku.
Right.
You know, Hercules had turned mid-card.
He beat King Haku. I don't understand that.
Why?
What kind of upside did a face Hercules have in 89, three years prior to his PWI Rookie of the Year award? But I mean, what kind of upside did he have?
Well, if you remember, he had just turned face.
Sarah.
Yeah. And he didn't kind of come out positive. They needed to give him a big win, I think, because they did the thing with DiBiase, and that was the other match. Of the night that Savage turned on Hogan. That was the only other match on the show. He lost it. And I think they just wanted to keep him strong. Haku was going to lose the King anyway to Duggan shortly after this.
Okay.
So, I mean, Hercules, again, he needed to get some heat. He needed to beat a Heenan family member after Heenan kind of sold him down the river.
That's Duggan, who got no heat from that that double DQ with Bad News Brown.
Yeah, that was just like, remember, they tried hyping this as like two great brawlers, but this was not like the UWF Duggan versus the Stampede Bad News. You know, I mean, by this point,
needed to get a confab of Bill Watts and Stu Hart in a room to book this.
Yeah, thing. I mean, at that point, Bad News, I think, kind of realized he'd been hosed and wasn't going to get the title that he was promised. You know, the urban legend says Vince said he's the first black champion, obviously won the, he kind of was just like, you know, he wrong time, wrong period. Look, he feuded with Savage, but it kind of all ended when Savage turned. And, so that was a nothing match. And
Beefcake DiBiase, double count out
again. Yeah. And they were getting lazy too. Double count outs. Two guys that were over Beefcake and DiBiase, you know, Beefcake would be in the main event of SummerSlam.
Right.
That year.
Yeah, not exactly giving him a booster shot here.
Yeah, I mean, he does the big angle with Savage after the show. You know, he was kind of, you know, the big angle for Savage after WrestleMania.
But it just shows you Hogan wasn't booking his buddy's finishes here as of WrestleMania 5.
Well, here's the thing. DiBiase just become a million-dollar champion, which was being hyped.
In the previous fall.
No, it was like right before this, I think.
I think it was right after SummerSlam the previous year because when he was coming off not getting the belt from Savage, I didn't want it anyways. I'm pretty sure it was the fall of 88.
I'll have to check because I remember they made a big deal about him coming out with it. I thought he debuted at his Saturday Night's Main Event right before this. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's like with the booking that, it's like you can just smell the non-finish coming away.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it, all the Hart Foundation versus Honky Tonk.
There was actually a bit of a feud going in there. The Harts against their. But what was interesting is the Harts had been feuding with the Rougeaus,
right?
And this was like another Jimmy Hart team. They weren't Rhythm and Blues at the time,
right?
But they were
subsequently.
They kind of stuck together.
Dino Bravo defeated Ronnie Garvin in 350. Pure vengeance booking on my boy Ronnie Garvin. Let's downgrade the guy who held the big gold 18 months ago in the other promotion.
They, I think, signed him just to like ruin it.
They did.
He was
matches with Valentine. I'll say that.
Yeah, they did have some good ones.
Although the whole thing, it was hokey when they kept going for the pinfall in the submission match. Oh, force of habit, folks. That was a little hokey.
Yeah, that was bad. But I mean, he was new at this point, and they just beat him.
Yeah,
you know, Dino Bravo kind of got a big push in '89.
For reasons none of us will ever understand. So again, the boy, Red Rooster, Heenan.
Well, there was at least there was an angle behind it, but it was a real blink and you'll miss it. I think they were running short on time.
31 seconds, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Al Snow will tell you that made it memorable for Terry Taylor. So, you know, there you go. As I stir the pot a little bit more. Yeah, five was horrible. I mean, 4 and 5, where do you slot these historically?
I talked about how there's 10 subpar WrestleManias. I would put them.
Yeah, neither one of these is getting out of that 10.
Yeah. If you break them down, once again, 3 and 17 above the rest, and then if you broke the remaining 25 into 5 groups of 5,
right.
I would put these both at the bottom of the second worst group of 5.
Okay.
I would think they're, again, I think, I don't know. Like, it again, they're both, 4 is very hard to rate because I think the show worked. Like a WrestleMania 1. It worked very well as, you know, in terms of business. 5 was a success business-wise, but they're bad. I mean, 5 is just like all these matches with nothing. Rockers, Twin Towers, too.
But
much
like on 1, one-match show, do you have to give it the 5 over 4? Because, again, Hogan and Savage was an epic. God bless Randy Savage and his propensity for planning.
A lot of people say that they were disappointed by that match. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, there's some blood in there.
I mean, shades of what he would do 2 years later with the Warrior.
Well,
Randy Savage.
That was a much more Herculean effort.
Randy Savage could plan. I mean, you know, if he. I mean, some people made fun of it. I mean, you know, like I know, like Ric Flair. You know, after Randy Savage passed away, kind of goofed on him. I had to even come down to Sarasota. And we move for move. You know, we went out, we partied, we had a good time. But man, he wouldn't let it go until we hit every move 5 times, and you know,
Ric Flair's kind of,
people like to goof on Savage.
Ric Flair, I caught one of those Legends of Wrestling roundtables before he left the WWE.
Yeah.
He was on there. Has Ric Flair kind of become an ass?
Real bitter.
It's on Factions.
Uh huh.
Okay, if you can watch this on YouTube, he comes across like such an ass. And I love Ric Flair. Just watch it. He's just so unlikable. He just, like, buries everyone. He, like, oh, my God. He's just, like, such an ass.
I never thought that the Ric Flair of 10, 15 years ago would become old, that guy never drew guy. And that's exactly what he is.
What
did that guy ever do?
He had this air of, yeah, I mean, he was, first of all, those things could be so much better, I think.
Yeah.
Those Legends of, they're so, Gene Okerlund is dreadful as the moderator.
Oh, he's a horrible moderator.
Because he just, like, starts, like, cutting people off and, like, God, is he terrible.
He can't stop doing his Vegas shtick long enough, you know. He's a lounge singer schmoozing before he belts out another crappy song before 15 drunk gamblers in a lounge. He can't stop doing his shtick long enough to listen to what people are saying.
If it wasn't for Jim Ross, sometimes those things would be kind of, well, Michael Hayes is pretty good, too.
Exactly.
So.
I mean, I dare say. I mean, those, you know.
But Ric Flair was in such a, behaved like such an ass.
For lack of anybody else that I could think of off the top of my head, those things could really use, say, you know, Rick Morris to keep him moving along.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
Anyways, I knew I could get a laugh out of you for that. But no, I mean, he has become very unlikable on that stuff. But people like to make fun of Savage for that. But it got results where people make
DDP was like that. Look,
I was gonna say people make fun of DDP, and that's a little more justified.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm not a means guy. I'm an end guy. And at the end of the day, if you have good matches, who cares how it's done?
Yeah. Isn't it supposed to be like improv? Aren't you supposed to be able to react to what the crowd's? What if Hogan and Rock had stuck to their game plan at WrestleMania 18, damn the crowd, whatever.
Oh, then it doesn't work. But I'm saying if you do it that way and it works, then who cares?
True.
There is no right way to do a wrestling match.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, I think we can all look back at examples over a period of time that maybe things would have worked better for DDP had he shown a little bit of flexibility.
Sure, but, I mean, if you're a little more limited in the Rand Savage was not limited by any means.
No.
But so it's interesting he did it that way.
Right.
But I can't think of an example offhand where they were just too rigid to the game plan, and I can't think of a Randy Savage match.
No, I know.
Where I'm like, oh, you know, if they would have done a little more improv here, it would have been so much better.
I agree. I can't think of anything specifically either, and he was really
great at it.
This was the height.
By the way, that's something that needs to be taught. The height of Randy Savage was this period.
Oh, it was. You've talked about it before, 86 to 90, that he was the top worker in the company by a country mile. I would agree with that. I would slot 5 over 4 largely on the strength of this versus Savage DiBiase in the tournament final is not anybody's idea of an epic. I mean, it was
no, they
really
were both
good.
Tired. The crowd was dead tired. You know, it was very...
The atmospherics of this thing were off the charts. They built this feud for a year. The crowd was thirsty for blood, and sometimes the atmospherics take things to another level. That on the strength of this match alone, and again, there were a handful of other things here.
Strikeforce Brainbusters wasn't a bad match.
Exactly.
Last.
I'm a big Tully Iron Mark.
Yeah.
So
Rocker's Twin Towers is kind of a fun little big. I mean, granted, you know, you can all lament how the worker team jobs to the fat guys, but
they went 8:02 in that one. That's a lot longer than you would think the Rockers would get.
Yeah, and it was a pretty fun big guy versus little team match.
Right. Right.
You got what else? We need
Rude Warrior.
I remember I was really mad as a kid that Rude won. That was considered pretty shocking. That was Warrior's first loss.
Yeah.
And that was pretty shocking.
You know, poor Rick Rude getting his heat scooped by that leech Bobby Heenan in this match.
You know, I didn't know.
You hadn't heard that, huh, that Rude hated him for that?
I'm going to tell you something right now. Rick Rude, God rest your soul, I've never heard anything more incorrect in the history of wrestling than that viewpoint that he didn't like Bobby Heenan scooped his heat. Give me a break. Bobby Heenan drew Rick Rude's heat.
It was funny because I remember where I had first...
People forget, Rick Rude is one of the very few examples of someone who went to WCW and was better. Rick Rude was not that good. I mean, people remember his run. He had a very good shtick. Bobby Heenan was a part of that shtick.
That run against Warrior in 89, going into the fall run against Piper, I mean, Rude had it going on.
He was,
that
yeah,
time.
But that was pretty late in the run, too. You forget about 87. Okay, 87,
yeah,
he was very limited. 88, he had a hideous match at WrestleMania 4 against Jake Roberts. They didn't do the kind of the famous feud. But he didn't have any good like matches or anything. He was very limited as a worker early on.
Roberts was already bringing his demons to work at that point. I don't know that Rude got everything out of him that he possibly could have. In that
it wasn't
feud.
Bobby Heenan's fault to that much.
No. It was
funny to reference that.
I knew I had to provoke you after I told you that off air.
But a perfect blazer. That was, you know, well, again, criminally short.
Yeah, and it meant nothing, but it's fun to see two great workers in
because
there,
you didn't see that
great
very
workers like Hennig and Owen Hart.
Yeah.
And it's things like that that would allow you to sit through sheep or Bushwhackers or Rougeaus, which...
By the way, the Rougeaus.
Yeah.
Obviously, maybe some ill will from the Bulldog. I mean, God, they jobbing to the Bushwhackers?
Yeah, I don't know.
Ricky, you can't. I mean...
No,
I mean,
they
I mean, if I was the Rougeaus, I would have quit after that. I mean, if you're jobbing to the sheep,
right.
You know what... I mean, you
right.
you need to leave.
Well, they're a team that should have been in the mix potentially against Demolition.
Yeah, they would have been a better choice because they were kind of drawing some heat with the We Love the USA that kind of false.
I mean,
but
you know,
they were a lot better than the pop. But Vince liked the Demolition Powers of Pain thing. But that was they had Fuji involved.
Yeah.
That was bad.
They rode that into the ground. But that was so that was a handicap match for the titles. Okay, I didn't remember if the titles were at stake.
Oh yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so.
That was and it was just a one time thing. Fuji was out of. I mean, you know, he does the job.
Oh yeah,
he wasn't there to do the job. But you know, WrestleMania 5 though does not have. I like 4 better than 5. I'm going to disagree
with you. I'm going to go with 5 over 4 just based on Hogan Savage and. 89 is it's funny. I mean, this has nothing to do with it as a whole, but 89 is just a year I prefer in terms of wrestling, and I know you do too overall. And that's what we're taking the NWA into account.
Yeah,
as well.
Obviously, yeah.
I mean, 89 was a great year. I guess it's just my 89 nostalgia that I'm going to say that. So, okay. All right, so we've made it through three of these here. We got six more chapters to go here. The history of WrestleMania. So. Thanks very much, Kyle, as we conclude an epic taping binge here at the Orlando MGM Studios.
Fantastic.